Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. Hey, it's Shauna. Welcome to Everyone's Talking Money. In this episode, we're talking about a real estate strategy that's helping investors combat higher interest rates, which, let's be honest, they really suck right now, with consistent cash flow, something that we all love. It's called medium-term rentals. We're talking about it with Sarah Weaver. Welcome to Everyone's Talking Money podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Game. There's no judgment, no dumb questions, just smart conversations about you and your money. So come on in and grab a seat. Everyone is welcome here. You have to have been living under a rock the last few years to not know about the explosion of vacation rental homes or Airbnbs, like you might know them. It feels like everybody I know has an Airbnb, which makes me also stop and think, okay, if everyone has one, are they really that good or am I missing out on something? More recently, though, you might have heard this. People are talking about this idea of Airbnb bust, right? That's the actual implosion of that explosion. Because we all went out there in the pandemic, we bought up short-term vacation rentals like Airbnbs, and now everyone's competing with everyone else, and people just aren't staying at these as much anymore. So I've been thinking, all right, what else is out there? And it seems like you have been too, because I've gotten a lot of emails from you lately saying something like, I really love this idea of short-term rentals or Airbnbs, but it's a lot to manage those 2 to 3 day stays, consistently cleaning up after people, managing people, etc. You've been telling me all about the things that you don't like. So enter our new friend, Sarah Weaver. Sarah runs 3 businesses. Yeah, she's probably tired a lot, but she serves both real estate investors and real estate agents. She's also author of a new book called 30 Day Stay, The Investor's Guide to Mastering the Medium-Term Rental. So Sarah's really awesome. She travels around the country and she coaches real estate agents and she hosts these intimate retreats with investors talking about this idea of medium-term rentals. So yeah, it sounds like a dream life, but what Sarah's really passionate about is this idea of these medium-term rentals. So think of it this way, somewhere between a short-term rental and a long-term rental is this magical world of medium-term rentals. And according to Sarah, medium-term rentals are basically like having your cake and eating it too when it comes to real estate investing. So Sarah owns 19 units in 4 states. This includes 9 furnished rentals, all of which she self-manages from afar, traveling all around the world. So you want to know how she does it? All right, let's start talking. You know, I get so many questions from listeners of the podcast who really want to buy investment properties. Like they've heard it's the best way to build passive wealth, like everybody's doing it. You know, I should be doing it. But there are a lot of concerns now, right? We've got higher interest rates, housing prices. You know, people are having to go over the list price to buy properties. You know, then there's all these articles about the eroding like Airbnb market of all these people who bought Airbnbs during the pandemic. And now people aren't staying at as many Airbnbs and people are kind of losing money that way. But you found this alternative that's like somewhere in between like buying a home to Airbnb for short terms and buying a home for long-term rentals. And you call it the medium-term rentals. And I'm really excited about this because we haven't really talked about this concept. So, you know, give us a little bit of the scoop, like what's so great about medium-term rentals?
Absolutely. Well, let me first say that yes, real estate is an incredible vehicle for building wealth. And I'll be the first to say that medium-term rentals are not incredibly passive. So those are like the 2 things I want to make really clear. Great way to build wealth, not a super passive way to build wealth. So what is a medium-term rental? Like a short-term rental, it's furnished. So I own furnished rentals. I also own unfurnished rentals. But a medium-term rental is furnished like a short-term rental. But instead of having a 2-night stay or a 3-night stay, you are focusing on capturing these longer-term stays. And when I say longer, I mean 30 days or more. So on average, my medium-term guest is staying 87 days.
Wow. Okay. So like who are these people that are booking these stays?
What's incredible is that it's so many different reasons that someone needs a furnished rental. So an example is someone just booked this morning because her lease has ended on her like long-term rental, but she's moving to a different state, but not for like, there's this awkward month in between. So it's like, she doesn't want to move out and like move her stuff 3 times. And so she just needs a furnished rental. So that's an example. Another example is someone renovating their kitchen. Whereas maybe years ago, they would have just lived in inconvenience. But now she and her husband both work from home. And they're like, oh, we don't want to live in a house without a kitchen, because we both work from home. So right. They lived in one of my medium term rentals while their kitchen was being renovated. Another really popular example is travel medical professionals. So anyone familiar with travel nurses, their average contract is 13 weeks or 12 weeks, 3 months. And so I rent to a lot of travel nurses. And then any occupation that's seasonal, someone that comes in for hail damage. That's really common in the Midwest. And, you know, these workers travel to where the storms are and then they need a furnished rental.
It makes a lot of sense. You know, I live in Asheville, North Carolina, and I guess I never really thought about medium-term rentals. And then, you know, I had a friend of mine who was renting a place and she was renting it for 3 months. And I was like, gosh, like, that would probably get really expensive with Airbnb to rent for 3 months. And she's like, no, it's this, you know, they rent, the landlord rents these like medium term rentals.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of, like healthcare here in Asheville and a lot of nurses and traveling nurses. And it's like, wow, I didn't even think about like that was, you know, an option. And I guess it's because we just, you know, we don't hear about it a lot. Like, why is that?
I think, I mean, unless you're in the industry, I mean, why would you hear about it? Think about all of the jobs when you meet people and you're like, wow, I've never even thought about that job. And so I think that just falls into that category. And so for your listeners, it's like, okay, but why would Sarah do medium-term rentals? Why not just do short-term rentals? Isn't there more money in short-term rentals is what I hear a lot of the time. And while certain times of the year, for me specifically, I own a furnished rental in Omaha, Nebraska. So even furnished rentals in not like hot markets do really well. And in June, the College World Series comes to Omaha. So I switch it over to what we call a short-term rental. I allow for these, you know, 3 or 5 night stays for the College World Series. And I may net more money in the month of June. But then come September, October, if I haven't placed a medium-term tenant into that unit, I have really high vacancy. And so I get higher vacancy, and then I get higher occupancy if I switch to medium-term rental. But also I call it mind space. So I mentioned right at the beginning that medium-term rentals are not passive. So you have to secure your tenant. You need to communicate with the tenant. You need to communicate with the cleaner. And while a lot of this can be automated, it still takes up what I call mind space. Like I'm always thinking, I didn't hear from the cleaner yesterday. Did she actually go to the unit? I need to open my lock app and I can look at the app and see that she entered the unit or didn't. But that takes what I call mind space. And for your listeners, I'm fully nomadic, which means I'm traveling full time all the time. Frankly, it's about as exotic and exciting as it sounds. It's my dream life. It's like the life that I wanted to live. And I just don't want to be hiking in Tanzania thinking, I wonder if unit 5511, unit 2, I wonder how their checkout went. I just don't want to be thinking about that.
That probably makes a lot of sense. I would not want to be, I would be wanting to think about my steps that I'm taking and
breathing maybe, and surviving breathing
and like not falling off a mountain or cliff or getting eaten by something. That would probably be where my thoughts were. So I want to get to the digital nomad in just a little bit, because you and I both love traveling and I want to talk about that a little bit more. But you know, if I'm listening and This is intriguing to me. Like, tell me, like, what's the profile? Like, what does somebody look like who, you know, gets into buying properties for medium-term rentals? Like, you know, how much money should I have? You know, all that kind of good, juicy stuff. Like, what am I looking for?
Yeah. Oh, man. For those of you that are not listening to this podcast with us on camera, I have the biggest smile on my face because I love talking about exactly this. That real estate investors, I thought, looked like, you know, rich, wealthy, older people. And the truth is that real estate investors can look like anyone, because you can get into real estate investing using other people's money. So if you're scrappy and gritty and you can do the work, you can be what I call the hustle partner. And then you find a money partner and you do the work, you find the deal, you manage the deal, you furnish the deal. You know, you're kind of the hunter and the gatherer, and then you just use someone else's money. So then either one of those profiles could look like anyone, right? You could be the hustle partner or you could be the money partner. And then one of the reasons I love talking about this is I own a company where I take real estate investors on epic adventures around the world. And I do retreats and trips. And when I'm going hiking in Tanzania, that's all with real estate investors. And I love that because when you look at my trips, you have people from, you know, 26 to 60. And from all different walks of life, from all different like wealth profiles, if you want to call them that. And so really anyone can invest in real estate. I do think that there's a lot of grit necessary to be successful and not lose your mind, because real estate investing is not always a walk in the park. But really anyone can invest in real estate. So because your podcast is everyone's talking about money, let's talk about money. So how much does it cost to invest in real estate? The reality is that I have friends who are very successful in real estate and they are buying houses. Yes, like habitable homes for $75,000 is their total price for the home. places like Columbus, Georgia, and these are just like examples. These are friends of mine. So, my friend Kat buys homes like that in Columbus, Georgia. My friend Corey buys homes like that in Oklahoma and Wisconsin. I personally don't buy homes like that. My most inexpensive property that I bought was $180,000 was the purchase price. And it's actually a 2-unit. So it's a duplex and each tenant pays about $1,000 a month. So I'm bringing in $2,000 a month in rent and my all-in purchase price was $180,000. And so that's just an example. Exactly. That's just an example. I've also bought a building that was $380,000. And that's a 4-unit apartment building. That one is really exciting because it's a medium-term rental. And I bring in $7,500 a month in rent. Whereas my monthly payment, my monthly payment, my principal, interest, taxes, and insurance is $2,014. So the math, just so you guys can hear that, like 20% on something worth $380, let's just call it, you know, $80,000. That's a big chunk of change. So for someone to have, you know, $80,000 just for the down payment, that can be a lot of money. But I've also bought a house where I put $6,000 down for the down payment. I've also bought a house where I put $0 down for the down payment. So real estate investing really can look a lot of different ways.
And I think what's exciting, and I wish that I would have known about this when I was in my 20s, because I bought my first house at 24 in Los Angeles, and it was expensive at that time. I think it was about $330,000. And, you know, we scrapped together as much as we could from a down payment. And luckily, we had money from a little bit of money from our parents, not a lot of money, but obviously that was very helpful. But, you know, we really had no business like buying a house that purchase price at 24 years old. But somehow we made it work. But, you know, I wish that I really would have learned this about real estate back then, because I think it's a really unique way to build wealth and also yes. to create cash flow. And so I think about this, you know, when I was a practicing certified financial planner and I would talk to people about buying their first house, I would also talk to them, you know, if there wasn't a lot of money available, like, could we buy a rental property and we create cash flow for you? And then maybe you use some of the equity in that house to take out and buy your house that you actually want, like down the line. And now all of a sudden you have two things and you have one thing that's generating cash flow. And, you know, you'd watch like light bulbs, like kind of go off, you know, like, whoa, you can do that. And so I think it's really fascinating, you know, even if you aren't sure which way you want to go when you buy your first property, it's really exciting to me, like this idea that you could buy something and, you know, the mortgage could be $2,000 and you could make $7,000 just by using, you know, a concept like this, and suddenly you make $5,000 a month. I mean, that starts to be like real math for people.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are scared away from real estate because they just don't feel like it's for them. And so, what I really want your listeners to understand is that you may know nothing about houses. So, nothing about the construction, renovation, rehab. That's totally okay. That all can be hired out. You may know a little bit about some of that stuff, but then maybe you're like, whoa, like spreadsheets and CapEx and capital expenditures, that all sounds like gibberish to me. That's okay. That also can be hired out, or you can learn how to do it. And so I really believe that real estate investing is a great way to build wealth for anyone willing to put in the work.
What about though, if we're, reading articles or if we even listen to the news anymore, but somehow we're getting our information somewhere. And all the talk is around the fear of buying anything right now, that it's the worst time to buy. Interest rates are high. It just, it's kind of this fear cycle of buying real estate. Is that true? Or like, how do we put that all into perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's always a bad time to buy a bad deal. So I think that's really important for everyone to understand. And so there are good deals still out there. It is more difficult to make a deal work when the money that you're leveraging is 7.5% interest versus 3% interest, like we were experiencing not that long ago. And so it would be naive of anyone to think that they're going to find a cash flowing deal every day easily. So it is more difficult to find a really good deal. However, so many people are doing exactly what you just said, listening to the news, and they're sitting on the sidelines. So our competition with some of these good deals is so much lower. So there's a more likelihood that you can get something under contract. And then when you pair the medium-term rental strategy with out-of-state investing, so you go to a market that is less expensive or where it still is possible to cash flow, and then you furnish the unit and you rent it to medium-term tenants, that's where the magic happens.
All right, this is getting really interesting. Let's take a quick break for our sponsors. And when we come back, Sarah's going to share something really important, how you find a money partner. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/etm. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/etm. That's monarchmoney.com/etm for your extended 30-day free trial. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in "Talkin' Money" under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters, and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless, 14 karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/etm for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/etm to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/etm. So tell me a little bit about, you kind of dropped this in, and I want to make sure we talk about this idea of finding a money partner. How do you, who are you looking for? How do you find that person?
You just open Tinder and you start swiping. No.
There needs to be a Tinder for real estate investing, right?
So obviously I'm joking. I think what you need to do is you need to decide which partner are you. And you don't have to be experienced in the sense that you've done 20 deals. However, I would be really weary if you've only done one deal. So you may need to look at doing partnerships for deal number two or number three. So that's something to keep in mind. But then where to find partners? I've found partners in some of the most unique places. One of them was just a family friend. She had been watching what I was doing. You know, I post on Instagram, I talk about what I do, and she had been watching from afar and then was just right place, right time. When a deal came across my desk, she had been asking questions about real estate investing. So I brought the opportunity to her and she said yes. Then not long after that, I had another deal that was great for a money partner. And someone had messaged me on Instagram. He and I went to undergrad together. And his exact message was, "What the F do you do?" He's like, "You're like traveling the world, but you're always talking about real estate. I am so confused. Like, you're not an agent. You're not a flipper. Like, what do you do?" And I was like, "I buy real estate and hold on to it. And then I travel the world." And he's like, "Cool. I have some money." And that was more or less how the conversation went. And so I knew him from undergrad. And again, he followed me on Instagram. And then my third partner, I met her at a conference. And so for anyone looking to get into real estate, my advice would be start attending local meetups. It's a really great free way to start making relationships with people in your market or in your area to invest. And you might be surprised. Someone might just say the right thing and you get along well, and their needs match your needs and your wants. And the next thing you know, you buy a property together.
Perfect partnership. Yeah. I want to get back to talking about traveling. I mean, obviously, this is a really fun topic, right? So you've built your portfolio of medium-term rentals and all the properties you have, all while traveling, living abroad, like you say, having this nomadic life. And I think traditional wisdom is that, you know, you have to see the house you're buying. You know, you have to touch it. You have to feel it. You have to maybe even live close to it. You have to maintain it. You have to check on it. You know, there's that just that wisdom. And I think that feeling of like, I've got to be close to where this is at. But you say no, there's obviously another way of doing this. So, I mean, how in the world do you find the bravery to invest in places that you've never seen while you're traveling?
Yeah. Bravery is a very interesting, I'm like, I don't always feel brave, but you are right. I do what I call function in the fear. So I want everyone to hear me when I say I'm still scared when I do this. Okay. And I have bought property, in an area of town that I had never been to. I was in New Zealand at the time and I analyzed the deal, wrote the offer, went under contract and closed from 8,000 miles away. And then 2 months later, I bought two properties in Des Moines, Iowa, and I had never even been to Des Moines. And so you listeners can buy real estate in places you've never been. And you have to have a few things. You have to know how to analyze deals. You have to know how to analyze markets. And then you have to build an on-the-ground team. And so an on-the-ground team, for me, starts with an investor-friendly agent. Then he or she's going to introduce you to a contractor, an appraiser, an inspector, a plumber, a property manager, some other like contractors. And then those people are your eyes and ears. And then your phone is your greatest tool. I don't need to walk a property. I don't know more about plumbing than the certified licensed plumber. So he's going to send me photos and videos, and then I'm going to pay him via Zelle or Venmo once his work has been checked.
Magic, right? Yeah. So, you know, we're talking about all the good sides of real estate, but I know everybody has like a horror story around real estate. I mean, I just got to ask, like, do you have one?
Oh, I have lots. There has been a lot of tears shed during real estate investing. I hope that that's really clear. And if that scares you away, then invest in syndications or the stock market. But if you can handle it, then you just really keep your eye on the big picture. So, gosh, let me think of a good story to tell you guys. I have had a tenant who they did something silly and created a plumbing issue. And of course, it was not in a side-by-side duplex. It was in what we call an up-down duplex. So the upstairs leaked into the downstairs. And so now I have a problem in both units. So now I have, you know, two sets of tenants that I have to coordinate with. And thankfully, they actually were very pleasant, but they could have been upset, right? So you're coordinating with all this. And so I'm texting. All of this is over text, by the way, you guys. I'm texting tenants. I'm texting vendors. Maybe I hop on the phone every once in a while. Otherwise, this is all handled via text and email. And we had to remove kitchen cabinets. And unfortunately, mold had started to grow behind the kitchen cabinet. I mean, this all happened like within days. It's not like I neglected any issues. And we get a phone call from the mold remediation company. And he's like, we can't take care of it because of the shrimp.
Oh, no.
I was like, I'm sorry, what? This is in Des Moines, Iowa. What do you mean shrimp? I'm like, is that like a plumbing term? No, I assumed he was actually talking about shrimp. I'm like, what? Yes, the tenant, I cannot make this stuff up, you guys. The tenant had a fish tank full of shrimp that he had bought on the side of the road, assuming he was planning on eating them. And then I don't know how or why thought to Google this breed of shrimp, and turns out it's in rare breed of shrimp. So he's now breeding shrimp in his fish tank in his unit.
Oh God.
And I'm just like, I don't even like have words. Like, I'm like, is this, am I being punked? Like what? And then, you know, jokes are like, oh, should I like, is this like a per pet fee? Like how many shrimp are we talking about? And in, I could have been angry and, you know, like this could have ruined my day because now I have to like re-coordinate with the tenants and the mold remediation people have to go back out the next day. But this is just so funny. Like we just have to laugh. and stuff like this happens in real estate all the time. It may not be shrimp, but just kind of like head scratching, like, I'm sorry, what did you just say?
Right.
Moments happen all the time.
So we were talking before we hit record just about how much you love talking about money. Obviously, it's the name of the show. And I want to dive a little bit into your story because I just think this really like affirms that, you know, we don't have to be rich. We don't have to be old. We don't have to be whatever the stereotypes we think about around, you know, building wealth and creating financial independence. Like they just don't have to apply to us anymore. So in the conclusion of your book, you say that you're just this girl from Kansas who put her head down, didn't listen to people who said investing in real estate was risky or a luxury reserved only for the rich. Instead, you listened to yourself and you really wanted to just travel the world and earn returns from real estate to fund your ideal life. And you did that. So tell us the story of like, of being 27 and single and making, you know, $40,000 and just deciding, I'm just going to take this risk and I'm just going to start investing.
Yeah, absolutely. It came from a long, like, look at what I wanted my life to look like. So I, it may seem on paper like, oh, wow, this girl's like, you know, living in Korea or Brazil, like she must be, you know, really spontaneous. But the reality is I'm actually really, really intentional. And so I set out after college and just really saved. And that wasn't fun. It wasn't sexy. Like, you know, like eating only off the happy hour menu or like exactly. Pre-gaming before. So, and I want to be really clear that I was living a really full life. I was not, you know, eating ramen, not traveling. I was traveling and I was living that hostel life, like really backpacking it up. Like sometimes it was peanut butter and crackers so that I could afford to go to the cool club that night or whatever it might be. And so I just learned really quickly, like where I wanted to penny pinch and where I wanted to spend money. And what really set me on like an excellent money trajectory was I taught English in South Korea. And a lot of people don't know, but it's actually quite lucrative because you don't have any expenses. And so that I think is like subconsciously where I learned to keep my like day-to-day expenses really low. Because there you have your housing covered, they fly you out there, you have healthcare. Woo, us Americans are like, this is awesome. And so I kept my expenses really low and I had a really good goal. I was going to end my contract teaching English in Korea and go backpack for 3 to 6 months. And that was going to cost money. And so I had a really clear goal and I just saved and saved and saved. And if I found other ways to make money on the side, I did it. So I wrote blog posts and was a content like writer. I taught English on the weekends and just found other ways to make money. And then in doing so, I saved enough money that I paid off my student loans because that was wow. Right after college. And I paid for university by myself. So anyone out there that's like, oh, she's so lucky. I paid for school by myself. And so I did graduate with some student debt. And that year in Korea just taught me so much about money. And then I moved back to the US and realized how expensive it is. I had to get a car. I had to get an apartment. You have to furnish the apartment. Your friends all have nice stuff. And you're like, dang it, I want nice stuff. And so it really hit me that you need to make more money. And so I focused on ways that I could make money. So that's my like first piece of advice is like really focus on how you can keep your expenses low and make more money. And then it gets fun when those two things get further and further apart. And I just never did the lifestyle creep. And I'm still like almost struggling to do life, like with like actually spending money. My CPA is now a friend of mine. And she's like, girl, you got to spend some money. Like you just, you don't spend money. And that is something that I'm really proud of, that I've learned to not spend money. But I also recognize that frugality is probably also a symptom of scarcity mindset around money. And so for those of you listening that you resonate with that, like check yourself or meet with a money professional to check some of those frugal tendencies and make sure you're not being actually have scarcity mindset.
Want to know where to just start with medium-term rentals? Sarah's got an action plan. Stay tuned for all the juicy details. When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle, full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That's a good point, though, because, you know, when we talk about relationship with money, we tend to focus on something that we would consider like a negative, like we're out there just spending and spending and spending. And where does that come from? And, you know, what drives our spending? But also with frugality, like you said, could be, you know, this symptom of scarcity and this just fear around spending money and having some fun. And so I think it's always about like trying to find a middle place where you can have some fun, you can enjoy your life, but you're also honoring, being intentional, you use that word, you're honoring your goals and the things you want to do with your money. And obviously you've seen how money can grow. And yeah. So I would imagine that that also is like a really exciting thing. You want to just continue to see it grow.
Yeah, I'm a really competitive person. So if anyone's listening is competitive, I also kind of gamify money. Like, okay, how much can I save this month? How much can I make this month? And then how much are my investments making? So that's what was so cool about the medium-term rental strategy is it was like, for me, it completely gamified real estate investing. I was like, you're telling me that this one bedroom long-term rents for $800? But if I furnish it for $4,000 to $5,000, which, sorry guys, inflation, that's not really possible today. That same furniture now would cost me like $7,000. So let's just say it costs $7,000. But now I can rent it for $1,900. I was like, I just gamified real estate investing. And so now half of my portfolio is long-term rentals and half of my portfolio is medium-term rentals because I saw the potential in that strategy. And so I definitely realized that you do have to spend money to make money. There's a reason that that's a like common phrase. And so sometimes I had to quiet that frugal part of myself, so that I could invest and truly build wealth.
Traveling all around the world, like you have, I'm curious what, maybe like what you've picked up from other cultures about money and their relationship with money and how they interact and like who you might think like is doing it well.
Yeah, I think that it all comes back to happiness. So I am happiest when I am connecting with people. Like that's like my deepest desire is true connections. And so for me, I don't need to be wearing luxury clothes or sitting at a Michelin star restaurant. I could have, you know, my feet in the sand and my, you know, Brazilian flip-flops and be having like the most amazing conversation with someone spending a couple dollars a day. And so whereas there are other people, and I'm sure some of your listeners are like, nah, I like really like luxury. Well, then you need to find a way to fund your ideal life. And so I think that traveling has taught me that is that I don't need a lot of these other things to bring me happiness. And just started to figure out what do I need. And sometimes it's, you know, I don't want to do the 3 stopovers like I used to when I was being super budgety. So there's certain things I've learned along the way. And then as far as other cultures, the greatest thing that I've learned is to really quiet that workaholic piece of myself. That is a true American trait that serves us. I mean, it serves us in some ways if you understand how to have harmony. I think balance is a myth. I don't really believe in balance, but I do believe in like living a harmonious life. And for me, I can't work all the time. That's not good for my mental health. It's not good for my connections with my friends. And so that is something that I've been gifted with other people and other cultures is that they're like, wow, you Americans work a lot. Like, have you taken 35 days of vacation this year? If not, take a vacation.
I know. I mean, it's crazy how, you know, you go somewhere else in this different culture and, you know, obviously they know you're American or you say you're American. And usually the first thing that comes out is something around us working too hard or not enjoying life enough. And it's like, wow, that really just kind of slapped you in the face, you know?
I have a great story. I was sitting in the like northern part of Guatemala at the Zephyr Lodge hostel, which has like an amazing infinity pool. But the rooms are real grunge, real scary. And I'm sitting there with a bunch of backpackers and there's this Australian couple and she's reading some book I had read. I can't remember what it was. It was probably like a Leanne Moriarty, you know, like an interesting fiction book. And I'm reading a book about business and money. And she just looked at me and she's like, that is the most American shit I've ever seen. And she's like, what, who are you? What's your story? And I'm like, I don't even want to tell her I'm a real estate investor.
Right. Exactly. That is great. You're like, well, okay, I'll put this book down. Is there another one I can pick up? Yeah. It's true, but I tend to read books about business. And even when I'm on vacation, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, why am I not resting my brain? Like, my brain is always going. There must be some way to, like, can I pick up something fun and dumb and just read that?
I do have a book for you. You should read. Oh my gosh, who is it by? Kristen Newman, I think is her name. And it's called What I Was Doing While You Were Breeding. And she lived in LA and she's a television writer. And in her 20s and 30s, all of her friends were getting married and having babies, and she was traveling. And that is it's a laugh out loud read that sometimes I pick up again because I'm like, okay, I need to put down to the business book and read something funny.
All right. I'm putting it on the list. I will link it in the show notes for everyone listening. So you detail so much in your book, 30 Day Stay, but you know, I'm thinking for someone listening, like maybe just give us a little bit of the Cliff Note version. If this is something we're interested, where in the world do we start? Like, where do we go from, you know, step one?
Yeah. So if you're interested in real estate investing, you first have to figure out what are your goals. So I'll give you an example. I had someone come to me, his name was Scott, and he was like, okay, Sarah, I want to own, you know, 19 medium-term rentals. I want to furnish them myself, self-manage myself. I'm like, okay, great. Let me let's put together a plan. And then before we do, why? And he's like, well, I want to spend more time with my wife and kids. I was like, okay, well then you're not going to furnish yourself. You're not going to self-manage. That is going to give you a J-O-B, a job, and you want to spend more time with your wife and kids. So figure out your why to ensure that your strategy is in line with your why. So for him, it makes more sense to do long-term buy and holds out of state and use a property manager. That's what he ended up doing. He could have also done something even more passive called syndications. And so the first step is figure out your goals or where are you going? Then how are you going to get there? So it likely is going to involve picking a market, picking a strategy, and learning how to analyze deals. Even if you don't like spreadsheets, you don't like math, I'm telling you, I have a journalism degree and I'm really good at analyzing deals. And that gives you a lot of confidence so that when you are scared, like I told you guys, I function in the fear, you always go back to your deal analysis spreadsheet and you're like, okay, I'm scared and this is a good deal. So I'm going to take the next step. And so those really are the first steps. So pick a market, pick a strategy, learn how to analyze deals.
Walk me a little bit down the pick the market piece, because I think that's probably where a lot of people get stuck is if it's someplace that's not close to me or that I know, how do I know it's a good place? Like, how do I find that on a map?
Yeah, absolutely. So first, what I tell people is that there are so many people in the United States making great money in a ton of different markets. There are a few markets where I'm not interested. I'm not going to name them because then I'll get an investor that says, well, I'm making money in that market. And that's exactly the first thing I just said is there's real estate investors in every market making money, right? So sometimes it just makes sense. Like, where are you drawn to? Like, do you want to own an Airbnb in Asheville? Maybe you're like, hey, I know that that's like a great, like, you know, destination for bachelorette parties or even just I had a 19 person reunion, like college reunion of friends in Asheville. We stayed at two Airbnbs. So is there somewhere in the country that you're drawn to or even out of the country? I have friends making great money owning Airbnbs all over the world or even just long-term rentals. So is there a market that you're drawn to? And then here are my metrics. I want to see population growth. Because again, we're parking our money in a property. I want that market to be getting better over time. Simple economics, even if you took this in high school, supply and demand, we want more people because that means more potential renters, right? We don't want population going down. So that's metric number one. Metric number two is I want those people moving there for jobs. So I want to see job growth. So I want to see a 20% population increase over a decade. I want to see 2-3% job growth year over year. And then I want to see wage income growth. I'm not going to put a percentage to that because frankly, wages are not keeping up with inflation. So any number I said is going to be wrong, but we at least want it going up, not down. And then we want to see crime going down. Not only do you want your tenants to be safe, but you want your insurance rates to stay the same. And then from there, I want to see home values going up. The national average, some say it's 6% appreciation year over year. I think it's closer to 4 when you're looking nationwide. So therefore, I want to see a solid 40% decade over decade. That's 4% a year. So let's see at least that, if not more. More is obviously ideal. And those are my metrics. And then everyone's going to think, well, wait a minute, that's like a lot of markets that qualify. And I'm like, yeah, don't you remember the first thing I said? So many markets qualify. And then you just have to find, you could be in love with a market. You could say, man, I really want to own a property in, I'm trying to think of somewhere random, Fort Wayne, Indiana. But if you don't have an agent sending you deals, or you create deal flow yourself by sending mailers, cold callers, maybe you fly there, you knock on doors, whatever it is to create deal flow, it doesn't really matter how much you love a market. You have to have deal flow. So that's where it comes to building an on-the-ground team. And I start with investor-friendly agents. And if all of this sounds really sexy, but also really confusing, I am more than happy to hop on the call with someone and walk you through every single piece of this, because that's what I do. I teach people how to invest in real estate because there's a lot of moving pieces. And everyone listening to this podcast, you are smart enough to figure this out.
I was hoping you were going to say that you'd hop on the call with us, because yeah, I mean, when you start thinking, when you start digging down deeper and deeper, and even when I was reading your book, I was like, okay, it's somewhat simplistic or easy to understand, yeah, I should say,
totally.
Concept.
Yeah.
But obviously there are, you know, a lot of factors that go into it, just like anything. And so, you know, having somebody who has done it before and done it successfully and, you know, had some tenants that put shrimp, you know, we're breeding shrimp, and you know, you kind of know how to look out for us. And I think that's what's great about, you know, building a money team, building a money mentor team. And it's important to have people that that you trust that can help you open the doors or shortcut, you know, some of these ideas or strategies, even just to see if, you know, this would even work for me.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so, yes, if anyone's interested, there's a link in my Instagram bio or on my website, sarahdweaver.com. Please schedule a call with me. I love talking about two things, travel and real estate. And so I'm more than happy to help anyone if they're willing to put in the work.
Okay. Last question, a little bit of like a crystal ball question, but would love to hear your thoughts on this. You know, what do you think the real estate market's going to look like, you know, in the next few years? Like, is there anything that we should be prepared for or kind of on the lookout for what might be coming ahead for us?
Yeah, wonderful question. And man, oh man, do I wish I had a crystal ball. So do not, no listeners, do not slide into my DMs with like, you're wrong, because this is just my take on it. So
asterisk.
Exactly. So what I see is, well, first I look backwards. So what has history done? So of course we have 2008 as like a very loud reminder of what can happen. And what, let me tell everyone something that I like seeing and what helps me sleep at night is, while prices plummeted in some markets, not every market, rent increased or stayed the same, but mostly increased in every single market in the US during that period of time. So what does that actually mean for those of you that are like, okay, that sounds interesting, but what does that mean? So what that means is, if you were a real estate investor in 2007, 2008, 2009, and you owned a property, while the property value could have plummeted, and I say that word, I mean, that's a dramatic term, but it's true. The value of your home could have gone down. You could have even been underwater, meaning you owed more on the house than the house is even worth. But as long as you had a fixed 30-year or even 15-year mortgage, meaning your principal and interest, your principal and interest stayed the same, your monthly payment stayed the same, rent stayed the same or went up year over year during that time. Yes. So terrifying. I am really glad that I'm as young as I am and I didn't experience that, because I can't imagine what that would have been like to go through. However, for those people who were not completely over leveraged and could just sit and weather the storm, I'm sure there was a lot of sleep loss during that time, but rent went up. And so while I would be devastated if the value of my properties plummeted, you just sit and you weather the storm, because rent should not go down. And that's what I'm banking on. I'm banking on that rent will stay the same or go up every year. And I bought really good deals. And so I will continue to buy good deals and I will continue to buy real estate.
Are you an overanalyzer like me? I feel like I could spend all day, all year, just overanalyzing what real estate investing strategy is right for me. And I'm not kidding. I love to analyze things, but I think I analyze them like to a point of of ridiculousness, where it's like, all right, Shauna, you got to do something. And what I love about Sarah's story is that she just jumped in and she just figured it all out. That's really inspiring to me. And I got to admit, this idea of medium-term rental strategy, like, it sounds really interesting. It sounds sustainable and profitable, especially with the market we have right now. So if you decide to jump in, give this a try, send me an email. Let me know what your experience is like. Of course, tell me where you bought, because we all want to know that, right? Well, you can grab a copy of Sarah's book, 30 Day Stay, everywhere books are sold. And if you love a good deal, which I always love a good deal, you can get 10% off by going to ilovemtr.com. You can also check out her website, sarahdweaver.com, for all of her amazing details and everything that she's up to. If you enjoyed this episode and you got someone in your life, some friends that are trying to figure out, you know, what real estate investing strategy is right for them, I don't know, give them this episode. Tell them, you know, check out this idea of medium-term rentals. As always, you can head to the show notes for all the links to our episode guests, as well as the sponsors who make this show possible. I'll see you right back here, my friend, in a few days for a brand new episode.